Hello, this is Nancy Pippin with the Pantograph for Friday, January 31st, 2020. And we see that it's a busy day in the Pantograph world. We're going to have mostly cloudy skies with a high of 38 and a low of 30. And we'll get right to the local economy as the UAW looks to jobs at Ravinia. Lincoln deal may add to Bloomington Normal plant workforce. A United Auto Workers director said Thursday he's looking forward to jobs returning to normal after Lincoln Motor Company announced that it would partner with Ravinia Automotive to develop the first fully electric vehicle for luxury automakers. Lincoln confirmed this week that it's working with Ravinia, which will begin electric vehicle manufacturing in Normal later this year, as part of a Ford Motor Company's $500 million investment in the electric vehicle manufacturer. Last year, Ravinia and Ford said they would partner to develop a vehicle. The confirmation that the vehicle would be a Lincoln happened this week. There are a lot of skilled and talented workers in Normal, Illinois. Who will make for an excellent Ravinia workforce and build a world-class quality product. UAW Region 4 Director Ron McAfee Envoy said in a statement. Given the UAW's history in Normal and our history with Ford Motor Company, we look forward to these jobs returning and the UAW members having the opportunity once again to organize and form their local union, which has meant so much to that community. McEnvoy said, "It's a great day for our UAW members, UAW retirees, and for the surrounding community." This article continues on A2, and we'll pop over there now to see that Ravinia CEO R.J. Scaringe said, "Our vehicle development partnership with Ford is an exciting opportunity to pair our technology with Lincoln's vision for innovation and refinement. We are proud to collaborate on Lincoln's first fully electric vehicle. Working with Ravinia marks a pivotal point for Lincoln as we move toward a future that includes fully electric vehicles." Lincoln President Joy Felotico said in a statement, "Lincoln's first fully electric vehicle with Ravinia will be a sports utility vehicle and will join the Aviator and Corsair Grand Touring plug-in hybrid SUVs. The Lincoln battery electric vehicle will be built on top of Ravinia's flexible skateboard platform that will be manufactured at its Normal production facility at 100 North Ravinia Motorway." Lincoln production details were not released this week. Zach Demeter, Rivian's plant communication manager, said Thursday that Ravinia would not comment beyond the prepared statements. Ravinia is reconfiguring the former Mitsubishi Motors North America plant for electric vehicle manufacturing to begin later this year. About $29.4 million has been invested just in the past several weeks. Dittmer told the Pantograph last week that about 225 people are working at the plant so far. Vehicle production is expected to begin in late 2020 with the RIT pickup truck. Production of the R1S sports utility vehicle will follow several months later. "We anticipate 1,000 employees when we achieve full production within the next few years," Dittmer said. Lincoln in recent years has pivoted to an SUV-heavy lineup. The brand saw sales increasing more than 8% in 2019 as it transformed away from sedans. Ravinia received nearly $3 billion in investments last year, including from Ford, Amazon, and Cox Automotive. Ravinia and Amazon announced in September that Ravinia would build 100,000 electric vans for the e-commerce giant, in addition to Ravinia's planned R1T pickup and R1S SUV. And there's a note. This article was presented by Paul Swish at 309-820-3275, and the Detroit News was also a contributor to this report. So let's go back to page one. And on page one, we see a picture of Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker reaching out to Illinois State University senior arts education major Jessica Anderson of Pekin and ISU English professor Susan Coulter during a visit Thursday to the Winsook Kim College of Fine Arts on the Normal campus. He announced a $52.3 million in funding for construction and renovations of the Arts Fine Arts Complex. State Representative Dan Brady is to Pritzker's right, and State Senator Bill Brady is also to the right, and they spoke at this event. The title of the article is that Pritzker releases $52.3 million for art complex at ISU. Governor J.B. Pritzker announced Thursday that he is releasing the remaining $52.3 million for Illinois State University's long-awaited fine arts complex project, which is projected to cost $61.9 million. President Larry Dietz said the 2019-2020 academic year has been a good one for the Winsook College of Fine Arts. In addition to the release of funds for the renovation rehabilitation project, the college received a $12 million gift last fall from KIM, for whom the college and the School of Art are now named, and her husband Thomas Clement. Dietz said it's also good to see the state making investments in higher education on a bipartisan level. The project has been on the university's capital request list for about 20 years, and money has been earmarked for the project before, only to be held up by the state's budget troubles. The time, however, Pritzker told a packed room in the center, "You have nothing to worry about," although he joked, "Build fast." The university would like to build fast, but the first step will be to look at the scope of the project and what can be accomplished with the resources available, as costs of materials and labor have risen since the project was put on hold in 2015, explained Chuck Scott, who is retiring as ISU's interim associate vice president for facilities management. The project will include a combination of demolition, renovation, and new construction to enhance instructional spaces. Plans call for tearing down Centennial West and the Center for Visual Arts, extensively renovating Centennial East and adding new facilities. The buildings have been described as aging facilities that do not meet today's academic needs, with ongoing problems with roof leaks, plumbing, and ventilation, as well as access issues under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Freshman Braden Foreman, a music education major from Buffalo Grove, said, "I was in Centennial West this morning and our professor had to bang on the radiator to get it to work properly." Foreman said he is looking forward to seeing the changes, even if it won't be completed until after he graduates. Likewise, Danielle Kong, and here the article continues over on A5, Danielle Kong, who is a senior in graphic design, said, "I'm excited for it to be updated. ISU has used nearly $7.5 million in internal funding for emergency repairs and maintenance to the three buildings while waiting for the project to proceed. The Center for Visual Arts was built in 1973. The Centennial buildings were built in 1959 and resemble high school buildings of that era. At the time, the buildings were used primarily to train future music teachers and art teachers. Now, in addition to teaching, many fine arts graduates enter other fields such as professional performers or artists. Michael Wiley, director of the Won-Suk Kim School of Art, said, "This may be one of the best days of my career," which he began more than 18 years ago as a painting professor at ISU. "It will create a better learning space for our students." Despite the shortcomings of the facility, several students remarked that they were receiving a good education. Sarah Alfrey, a senior in ceramics from New York, said the college is a close, family-like community that is welcoming to everyone. Associate Professor Randy Reed, who has been at ISU for 30 years, described the Center for Visual Arts for being like a bunker and said the lack of windows in many of the classrooms does not lend itself well to the environment you teach in for art classes. The money comes from the $45 billion Rebuild Illinois capital program approved last year. Rebuild Illinois includes $3 billion for colleges and universities across the state. It also includes $89 million for a multi-phase rehabilitation of Milner Library and $40 million for general repairs and renewal projects. Earlier this month, Pritzker released $8.3 million for initial phases of the $83 million project at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale for renovation and an addition to the communications building. The length of time it took for the money to finally be released for the fine arts project was the focus of several comments at the announcement. "Good things take time, especially out of Springfield sometimes," said State Representative Dan Brady, a Republican from Bloomington, adding, "Working together, things like this can get done for the betterment of higher education in the state of Illinois." And if you have questions, you can contact Lenore Svoboda at 309-820-3240. And let's head back to the front page. Another key issue in the news is that key senators talk of calling witnesses for the impeachment trial. Key Republican senators who could tip President Donald Trump's impeachment trial towards summoning more witnesses played an oversized role in the final hours of debate Thursday night, with pointed questions ahead of a crucial vote. A vote on witnesses expected Friday could lead to an abrupt end of the trial with the expected acquittal, or it could bring days, if not weeks, more argument as Democrats press to hear testimony from former National Security Advisor John Bolton and others. Any four Republicans could join with Democrats to demand taking more time for testimony. Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska drew a reaction when she asked simply, "Why should this body not call Ambassador Bolton?" GOP Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee captured attention just before the dinner break when he questioned the partisanship in the proceedings thus far. Senator Susan Collins, the main Republican whose vote on witnesses was considered in balance, wanted to know why House Democrats withdrew a subpoena for a deputy national security advisor they wanted to hear from in the impeachment inquiry. In response to Alexander and others, Democratic Representative Zoe Lofgren of California, a congressional staffer during Watergate and now a House prosecutor, told senators that the Nixon impeachment also started as a partisan inquiry. A bipartisan consensus emerged only after Republicans, including some staunch staunch Nixon supporters saw enough evidence to change their minds, she said. They couldn't turn away from the evidence that their president had committed an abuse of power and they had to vote to impeach him. Lofgren said Richard Nixon resigned before he was impeached, while disappointed that the House Republicans did not join Democrats in voting to impeach Trump, she said the Senate, the greatest deliberative body on the planet, has a new opportunity. Alexander, after his question Thursday night, consulted with key staff aide to Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. As the senators broke for dinner, Alexander and Murkowski met privately. Republican Senator Mitt Romney of Utah is also among those being closely watched. Trump was impeached by the House last month on charges that he abused his power like no other president, jeopardizing Ukraine and U.S.-Ukraine relations. Democrats say Trump asked the vulnerable ally to investigate Joe Biden and debunked theories of 2016 election interference, temporarily halting American security aid to the country as it battled Russia at its borders. The second article of impeachment says that Trump then obstructed the House probe in a way that threatened the nation's three-branch system of checks and balances. And we head back to the front page here to see that we've covered the governor's visit to campus, the local economy, and now we've covered nationally the impeachment, and we have one more area, which is kind of a global article on the coronavirus in the area of healthcare. Coronavirus called a global emergency. Out of Geneva, the World Health Organization declared the outbreak sparked by a new virus in China that has spread to more than a dozen countries as a global emergency Thursday, after the number of cases spiked more than tenfold within a week. While a second case has been reported in Chicago, none has been reported in central Illinois. The UN Health Agency defines an international emergency as an extraordinary event that constitutes a risk to other countries and requires a coordinated international response. China is reporting 9,692 confirmed cases of the virus, with a death toll of 213. Friday's numbers covering the past 24 hours. And these represent an increase from 7,711 cases and 132 deaths on Wednesday. The vast majority of the cases have been in Hubei province and its provincial capital, Wuhan, the epicenter of the outbreak. Meanwhile, for the first time in the U.S., the new virus has spread from one person to another, health officials said Thursday. The latest case, the sixth in the United States, is the husband of a Chicago woman who got sick from the virus after she returned from the epicenter of an outbreak in China. There have been previous cases in China and elsewhere of the virus spreading between people in a household or workplace. The other five U.S. cases are travelers who developed this respiratory illness after returning to the U.S. from China. The latest patient had not been in China. Despite the confirmation on Thursday of the second case in Illinois, Central Illinois public health officials reminded residents that there are no cases yet in Central Illinois. At this time, the level of risk to the public remains low. However, if that changes, or if any confirmed cases within our county, we will share that information, said Jessica McKnight, administrator of the McLean County Health Department. We're working closely with the CDC and Illinois Departments of Health, and we'll be sharing updates as new information emerges, McKnight said. Melissa Graven, McLean County Health Department Clinical Health Services Supervisor, said the health department is collaborating with community and health care agencies to ensure mechanisms are in place to adequately and appropriately identify and any possible cases and report to MCHD immediately. If anyone has traveled to the Hunan and develops a fever, cough, and shortness of breath, they should stay home and call their primary care doctor and call their or an emergency room. Gravin said, we know coronaviruses are most likely to spread through close personal contact, and we know this second patient had close contact with his wife after she began to develop symptoms. So it's not totally unexpected that he acquired the virus, said Dr. Allison Arwadi, commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health. This is exactly why public health has been monitoring him closely and why we monitor any close contacts of the confirmed cases. Experts say there is a significant evidence that the virus is spreading among people in China and have noted with concerns instances in other countries, including the United States, France, Japan, Germany, Canada, South Korea, and Vietnam, where there have also been isolated cases of human-to-human transmission. Speaking to reporters in Geneva, WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus noted the worrisome spread of the virus between people outside of China. The main reason for this declaration is not because of what is happening in China, but because of what is happening in other countries. Our greatest concern is the potential for this virus to spread to countries with weaker health systems which are not prepared to deal with it. This declaration is not a vote of no confidence in China, he said. On the contrary, WHO continues to have confidence in China's capacity to control the outbreak. This concludes our front page articles, and now we'll kind of move over to a little lighter side as we find out what's going on with Flix Fact. Today's Flix Fact is a question about the Discovery Channel. On the Discovery Channel at 7 p.m. on Saturday, as the nation looks on, Central Illinois will be featured by what? One of three options. First, the Fighting Illini basketball team making waves. Second, the state's officials looking ahead to Illinois Super Tuesday primary, which will occur in March, or three, Bloomington man competing against a grizzly bear. So, Discovery Channel, 7 p.m. on Saturday. To find the definitive answer, you'll have to go there to look, but Flick gives us a heads up. Your choices could be something about the Fighting Illini, secondly, about Super Tuesday in March, or three, a Bloomington man competing against a grizzly bear. Well, if you said number three, you would be right. Yes, it's three. It will be a final seasonal segment on the reality series Man vs. Bear. He won a semifinal last week, so now it's on to the final three finale, which will include Bradley Slama of Bloomington. That's S-L-A-M-A. And of Bloomington, he will be competing on Man vs. Bear. So I'm sure if you enjoy the outdoors and adventure, you'll want to check that out. That's Saturday at 7 p.m. on the Discovery Channel. And we'll also look here quickly today in history. As this Friday is the 31st day of 2020, we only have 335 more to go. And today's highlights are, first of all, in 1958, the United States entered the space age with the first successful launch of a satellite, Explorer 1. And in 1863, it was a busy time during the Civil War. The 1st Carolina Volunteers, an all-black Union regiment composed of many escaped slaves, was mustered into federal service at Beaufort, South Carolina. 2 years later, in 1865, on this date, the U.S. House of Representatives joined the Senate in passing the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution, abolishing slavery, sending it to states for ratification. The amendment was adopted in December of 1865, and General Robert E. Lee was named the General-in-Chief of the Confederate States Army by President Jefferson Davis. As we go on through time, we found in the early 20th century, in 1917, it was on this date during World War I, that Germany served notice that it was beginning a policy of unrestricted submarine warfare, which, as you may or may not know, led to the sinking of the Lusitania. And then in 1919, just a year after the war, Hall of Famer Jackie Robinson was born in Cairo, Georgia. Now in 1929, the world was kind of turning, and in Russia, in 1925, revolutionary Leon Trotsky and his family were expelled from the Soviet Union. And finally, we close with our thought for today, for this half hour, that happiness is not having what you want, but wanting what you have. And those words come from Rabbi Chaim Sachel, who was an American theologian, author, and educator, and he lived from 1907 to 1990. Oh, and let's see, have any other? Oh my goodness, I always have to put these in. This is how time flies, and 50 years ago, January 31st of 1970, the half-century tradition of, quote, hospital notes, a daily pantograph column giving admissions, releases, and home addresses of patients at city hospitals, ended on this date. The hospital stopped providing information, patient information, mainly for privacy reasons. Area hospitals' notes will continue. And just a short 25 years ago today, former county board member Henry Bud Kelly was sentenced to home confinement, probation, and a fine for gambling charges and bribery. His wife was also fined and given probation. The light sentence resulted from their 100% cooperation. And that concludes our first half hour of the Pantograph for Friday, January 31st, and we'll take a short break and return with the second half in just a few moments. So please stay tuned. This is Nancy Pippen with the Pantograph.